It's Border Crossings with Larry London from VOA 1.
Hi, this is Larry London. It's Border Crossings. And on today's show, we have a very special guest joining us. This guy is a music icon who's been in several different rock bands. All of them have played a very profound role in the development and evolution of rock. He was with the Buggles back in the 70s. He was with Asia in the 80s. And back as far as 1969 and also up to today, he's been a large contributing member of the rock group Yes. We are welcoming Jeff Downs to Border Crossings this hour. We're going to talk to Jeff about the history of all of these bands, some of the great hits we've enjoyed from the three bands he's been involved with, and also how he got into the Guinness Book of World Records. Hang around with us on Border Crossings. Jeff Downs is our guest today, right here on The Voice of America.
You are the spin.
This is Larry London on the telephone. I'm speaking with a man who's been in the music business for, what are you going on, your fifth generation now?
Yeah, certainly over 40 years.
Unbelievable. Sure. Jeff Downs is on the phone, and of course right now he's on tour with a group called Yes, who gave us some huge hits. And I was just looking at some of the history of the band Yes. 21 albums in the group's history. Now, you weren't with the group for the entire 21. You've been with them for how long now?
Well, I played the first album was 1980, which was a drama album, which I joined for 1 year then. And then I came back into the band in 2011, and I've been there ever since. We've done two studio albums since then, one called Fly From Here and the other one was called Heaven and Earth. So, I'm not a sort of relative newcomer in some respects, but I did have a stint back in the beginning of the 80s.
It's amazing. You have been a part of several bands, several very successful bands who played a very important role in the development of music over time. And and with Yes, you guys were just inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame just a few months ago.
That's right. And I think a lot of people felt that it should have been, you know, earlier in the game, really, because I think that certainly... whilst Chris Squire was alive, I mean, sadly, he died 2 years ago, as you probably know, and Peter Banks about 4 years before that. So there were two of the original five members were no longer with us. So I think it was a bit of a shame that it took so long, but at the same time, I think it was, you know, fully justified in the end.
And it was one of those kind of unique situations where actually the fans are really behind a movement that helped to move this along to finally get this done. The thing was called Voices for Yes, and they finally, caught enough people's ear to get you guys inducted. So congratulations.
Yeah, that's right. Well, it was two years ago, I think, they started the campaign when we were first nominated, that was when, or maybe it'd be 3 years now, but that was when Chris was still with us. And I think he felt that we should have been in there, when we just missed out on the induction last time out. So I think it's probably nice that it did happen this time.
And you personally, Jeff, are in the Guinness Book of World Records for having performed on 28 keyboards in a single performance. I guess 28 keyboards were on stage one show that you did.
That's right. Yeah, that was the Asia in Asia show in 1983, which we did via MTV, via video link. It was a very elaborate piece of technology at the time because it was set up and bounced off three different satellites in order for the MTV viewers to get it live. So it was a pretty intense thing. But yeah, I had all these keyboards up there, and whether or not that's perfectly legitimately sanctioned by the Guinness Book of Records, I don't know. But certainly, it was a pretty spectacular show that I think we put on.
Well, what made you decide you wanted to do 28? I think you could probably get the job done with far fewer. Where'd you come up with the number 28 keyboards?
Well, I think in those days we didn't have what you call the musical instrument digital interface, MIDI, where you can now lock lots of different keyboards together and modules and that sort of thing. It wasn't so common then. And all the different sounds that are used on the records were often replicated by, one of those instruments. So it was very much, I consider myself to be more of an orchestral musician than just a straightforward keyboard player.
Mm-hmm. And you have definitely been a part of so many changes in music over the years. The technology's changed, the way music is delivered has changed, the way people buy music or get music is now different than it was. This is like the single has returned, you know, in terms of people can now buy one song online. It's like the single is back again.
Yeah, I think it's almost a full circle, but from an analog to a digital medium. But certainly from my standpoint, I was always, that was one side of keyboard playing that I was very interested in, was the development of all the different types of keyboards and how they were becoming, you know, sampling instruments and that sort of thing. I mean, I was one of the first people to take the very first Fairlight CMI, which was the original sampling keyboard. And I took one of those on the road with Yes, actually, back in 1980, and they'd only just come out. So I've always been one to try and stay at the cutting edge of the technology, certainly as far as keyboard design is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
But it has reflected in many ways into you know, the way that music has changed and people's perception of it has changed, certainly since the digital domain came in. We've seen, as you pointed out, you know, people ordering singles online and just picking whatever tracks they want to download off an album rather than listening to an album in its entirety. In some ways, that it's a shame that that's happened in terms of the album concept not being there anymore, because I think that was something that was very special, certainly for bands like Yes and Pink Floyd and Genesis, the great sort of British prog rock bands were really in that area. You know, people did buy those albums to listen to them in their entirety.
Mm-hmm. And you didn't get into keyboards by accident. I guess your father was playing keyboards or organ in a church, I understand.
That's right, yeah. And I was very much into church music. Well, I wasn't forced into it, but it fascinated me. And, you know, I think a lot of the style of the English anthems and that style of music stuck with me when I was growing up, and it's something that I think, you know, I've got to thank my parents for that I was involved in that from a very early age.
You reach, it can happen to you, it can happen to me.
we're talking with Jeff Downs, who is playing keyboards with Yes. Not only has he been with Yes and been there to receive a Grammy, I guess. Were you with them in 1985 when they got Best Rock Grammy for Cinema?
I didn't. No, that was it was the Best Instrumental Grammy, actually, funny enough, which, you know, considering Yes does have a volume of music as well. So, no, I'd left before then, but... We with Asia, we got nominated for a few Grammys in '82, which we didn't win. So as far as I've gone in terms of Grammy world, is a couple of nominations.
Mm-hmm. And he touched on the fact he was with Asia. So for those that don't know, Heat of the Moment, of course, one of the huge mega rock hits from the early '80s from the band Asia. And Jeff was right there at the keyboards, responsible for a large part of that success story. Now, one thing that you also were a part of that was, you know, I mean, we don't talk a lot about this and people don't mention it a lot for you, but you were actually there when the video age began, because it was really you were with the Buggles and you guys put out a video which has changed the way we view music or listen to music. And you know, MTV was born with your video, which was Video Killed the Radio Star, ironically enough.
Yeah, I think it, in terms of its content, it fitted perfectly with what they wanted to lay out. You know, I think that just sort of says it all in the title of the song, really, that if you're going to start a new music channel that was going to change, you know, the generations of music that had gone before, then that was probably the choice. And, you know, even though it had been released, I think probably at least... almost 2 years before that was actually MTV was launched. It was released in September 79, and of course MTV didn't come out till 1st of August 1981. So I think when Trevor and myself heard about the song being used for this new channel that had been launched, we didn't really attach much significance to it, because there were so many cable channels around at the time, and also it was started locally in New York and then spread pretty quickly. But within several months, it was nationwide, and it was, you know, it was the latest thing, and all the kids and adults alike were tuning into it, and you know, it became massive very, very quickly. And I think that, you know, I'm sort of proud of the fact that it's even a question on Trivial Pursuit. That we had the first video on MTV and then launched our whole generation.
I heard you on the wireless back in 52, lying awake intently tuning in on you. If I was young, it didn't stop you coming through.
Video killed the radio.
We're listening to The Buggles and Video Kill the Radio Star, and Jeff Downs is talking with us right now on tour with the band. Yes, he's been a part of Asia and also The Buggles, who gave us the song we just heard. So, so many different changes, so many different highlights with so many bands over your career. Do you have a highlight? Is there something, you know, one moment that stands out above the rest?
Well, I think when prior to forming The Buggles with Trevor Horn, I'd really just been a side man and just been doing session work in London, really just trying to earn a living. And I think that when we got the record away and we signed our first record deal with Island Records, the day that it went to number one in the UK was totally elation, not just for us, but for the record label themselves, because they'd had 10 number twos in the UK prior to Island Records. They had 10 number twos prior to that, so they were seeking their first ever number one, and I think that they went crazy over it. So that was an amazing day. You know.
Do you remember where you were when you heard your song on the radio for the first time?
I do. I was actually sitting at home, and they had this radio in London. The main radio station is called Capital Radio, and they used to have this thing where they'd play 10 new releases, and the guy is in the afternoon, and then the people would vote in, which was their favorite, and then they put that on their playlist, and Video Killer Radio Star was played, and apparently the phones literally exploded, people saying, you know, this is fantastic. So it got on the playlist, and then it spread quickly and was all over the radio within a week.
Now, one of the neat things about, and I use neat for lack of a better term, neat things about being in different bands is you get to be a part of different success stories, as, you know, obviously with Asia Heat of the Moment, and also with Yes, Roundabout, you get to perform that on stage as you tour every night. And, of course, Owner of a Lonely Heart, you perform that as well. You know, I mean, that's all of the songs in Yes were very much keyboard-oriented, as a rock band would be, that featured keyboards. You are a prominent player, and you are a prominent player with all of those songs that you've recorded.
Yeah, well, I was very much inspired by how Keith Emerson had approached presentation of keyboards in a band, where it was no longer the guy who was just sitting in the corner playing the piano. You know, this was a guy who was standing up and bashing his organ around and doing all kinds of things, and had a great big synthesizer systems on stage, and that was really the appeal that it was possible to take keyboards to the fore in a band in places. And I think that, you know, Yes is one of the few bands that keyboards played, you know, in most parts of quite a dominant role, not to overshadow the guitar, but, you know, in conjunction with And so I'm very fortunate that the bands that I have been involved in have been very keyboard oriented. I mean, even back to the Buggles, you know, we did everything on keyboards. You know, there were hardly any real musicians on there apart from a drummer. So and Trevor played bass, and I did everything else. So I've always been very, very dominant in that role as a keyboard player, I think.
And you also, I mean, I guess, I don't know what commercials played in London back when you were starting and writing commercial jingles, but did you have any of those songs that you can recall that became very, very famous?
We used the stuff like for furniture shops and carpet stores and that kind of thing. You just had to deal with what you were given, and
right.
You know, there were some very bizarre things that we did, and, you know, Jim Morio cigarettes in Saudi Arabia and stuff like this. You know, I mean, there's all sorts of stuff. But, you know, I was relatively, in terms of success, I was relatively successful at it. And we had our own little cell with five of us who were composing. And then we used to just go in and do the demos. And it, you know, it gave me a living. But, you know, I wouldn't say that it was a lavish lifestyle, but it certainly kept me going, that's for sure.
And then a few years later, you find yourself touring with Styx and Procol Harum and all of these other great rock bands over the years.
And I know, and, you know, Procol Harum were one of my favorite bands when I was a teenager. They were, again, you know, I think it was because of the fact that they were very keyboard-oriented.
Yes.
So, you know, I really got into that side of it. Not so much the bands like Led Zeppelin or, you know, know, or AC/DC or Iron Maiden or anything like that. You know, I was much more into the kind of British art rock keyboard players.
I never meant to be so bad to you. One thing I said that I would never do. A look from you and I would fall from grace. And that would wipe the smile right from my face.
Of music today, when as a guy who is an actual, you know, iconic part of music history, when you listen to what's out there now, do you get inspiration, or are you disappointed with what you hear?
I get a little bit disappointed by the level of performance that's not in the songs anymore. When you know, because a lot of this stuff is auto-tuned and stacked harmonically, it's to hear that lone voice that really gives you, you know, the power of a song, the delivery of a song, and, you know, like a Bing Crosby or, you know, whoever. But I was going back, obviously, a few years, but it's that distinction of a solo voice. Even people like Rod Stewart, you know, or Elton John, you can hear them actually physically on the recording, but or Billy Joel. But when you get to, you know, some of the more recent music, it's very, very almost just like an ensemble singing. So mm-hmm. You can't really identify the performer in the way that you used to be able to.
Now, it's amazing that Yes have lasted this long. I mean, not for lack of great music. I mean, that's obvious. But for you guys to just want to keep on doing it, night after night, going on stage after five decades, that's a lot of work. And that's a long haul. I mean, it's a testament to your talent to continue and sustain. But at the same time, I mean, does it ever get old? Do you say to yourself, why do I work so hard? What am I doing this for?
Not really, no. I think that it does get very tiring sometimes because, you know, you haven't got the stamina that you used to have, that's for sure, when you're in your 20s. But in terms of the musical excitement value, I think that's still very present because, you know, a band like Yes has managed to jump over so many generations and still stay fresh in a lot of people's eyes, and I think that's the importance is continuing to make new music as well. Certainly from the band's standpoint, it keeps the band inspired and you know, also moves the whole chapter of Yes along into another into a whole new era. So I think that it's very important to stay focused on new music as well as being able to perform the older hits like Roundabout, as you mentioned.
Call it morning driving through the sea.
On the phone with me now is Jeff Downs on tour with Yes. This is a world tour, I assume. You guys have had 17 live albums out, and I read where you guys were about a year or two ago, were on tour in Japan, and were thinking about making that into a live album. Is that still in the works?
Yeah, we've still got recordings from that. I think that a lot of it is down to timing. You know, you don't want to flood the market with too many live albums because every show just about is recorded now. I think that's the norm. People record every show and then eventually they'll go through the live tapes and put something together that's the representative of that particular tour.
Mm-hmm.
But we've still got stuff, plenty of stuff historically mounted up. But as I say, you can't just keep wrapping these things out every couple of months. You know, I think you have to try and keep the quality control up and not try and flood the marketplace with so much live stuff.
And it's been about 3 years since your last album, Heaven and Earth. So are you working on anything new?
Yeah, I think we've got plans to make some new music, and I think that, as I said, that will keep us all fresh and give and open new doors for us. The thing that Yes has lasted so long is because the fact is it constantly reinvents itself. So as a band, and I think, you know, people come and go, and it adds new musicians, and some people go off and do other things, but in essence, I think once anyone who's ever been in the band really does put in a massive amount of import and creativity into the equation.
And one of the cool things about it is that you get to meet new listeners and expose new listeners to your music all the time. Now, your fans, you have generations of fans now. So their children and their children's children are now, for the first time, hearing Yes and Asia and the Buggles and things like that. So you're
right.
Keeping that rock alive.
Well, it's amazing that you did get three generations of one family at a show, and I think that is testament to how how powerful Yes music is, that it can transcend those generations. And I think that it's not just something that is force-fed down the family line. I think it's something that very often, you know, some young kids come on their own, you know, because they've just discovered Yes music for some by accident. And so it does travel across a whole host of generations, which I think says a lot about how powerful the music is.
And one of the benefits of being a rock and roll star is you guys get to host a cruise, which is called A Cruise to the Edge.
That's right. We've done four so far now. We've done them consecutive years. I think we missed one year, but it's actually a very, very fun thing. And everyone's there they're all there for the right reasons. You know, they're not there to criticize people or get one up on people. I think it's much more of a celebration. It's almost like a festival at sea. And I think that, you know, it's actually very good for the fans because they get to see a lot of other bands that they wouldn't normally get to see perform. So it's a very, very interesting way of spending 4 or 5 days. And I think this next tour is nearly, this next cruise is nearly sold out. So if there's anybody out there thinking about it, they better jump on it pretty quick.
So when you're doing this for so long, what's your favorite part of this whole business? What is it that keeps coming back? Is it the songwriting or is it the performing? What is the part of the process that, you know, Jeff Downs likes so much?
Well, I think the crucial thing is the songwriting, which is the germ of the idea, if you like. And you know, as you probably know, we lost John Wetton earlier this year, which is a very sad loss for me because we had a very, very strong writing partnership together, which lasted, I'd say, probably almost 35 years. So that was something that, you know, as I say, it was a very sad loss to me personally because we were very close and we had a really good understanding of writing material together. You know, we wrote all the Big Asia songs. And we had our own side project as well called Icon, which you know was just really him and I our composition. So we wrote, you know, probably several hundred songs together, and that process really was to me was the most interesting because you get the germ of an idea and then you can turn it into something and then it's like planting a seed, you know, and then seeing the whole thing, the whole plant erupt to a full-blown bloom. And, you know, that side of it really to me was, and still is, collaboration is everything.
I can feel no sense of measure, no illusions as we take refuge in young man's pleasure. Breaking down the dreams we make real.
Are you guys going on a world tour, or is this just in the U.S. right now?
Well, we're in the U.S. right now. We just started, actually. We're just at the beginning of the tour. We just finished, I just finished a huge U.S. tour with Journey as well, with Asia and Journey.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
This is running for another 7 weeks or something like that. So I'm literally, you know, I'm probably in the States for about 4 months straight, which is a long time for me, but... the rest of the year, we're not going to be doing much. But we have a big year planned for next year because we've got the 50th anniversary of Yes.
Wow.
So that's going to start with a cruise to the Edge, and then it's going to go into Europe. We're going to play a number of shows in the UK, and then we're going to do a big summer tour and then go to Japan and possibly Australia at the end. So next year looks like the one really is the 50th anniversary that... where the touring is really going to get intense.
Okay, so we're talking about anniversaries and special dates, and you're going to be here in the U.S. touring with the band when your birthday happens. Now, I got to ask, what's the special plan for your birthday? What are you going to do here in the U.S.?
Well, I've got something planned, or some people have got things planned for a couple of days after when we get to Los Angeles, but... I'm actually going to be in Phoenix on my birthday, which is, it's a nice, as nice a place as anywhere to spend it in America. I like Phoenix as a place.
That's right.
We're in L.A. a couple of days later, so I'll probably have a bit of a party then on the day off.
Well, we're talking about August 25th, and I do want to say happy birthday to you, Jeff, and, many more happy birthdays and many more years of great rock songs. And wow, not many bands have had 16 books written about them, but certainly Yes have. And what a pleasure it is to meet you and to talk to you, and it's an honor to have you on The Voice of America.
Thanks very much, Larry. Nice to talk to you.
Thank you, Jeff Downs. Thank from you. The band Yes. They're on tour right now. Check them out. This is The Voice of America. Thank you very much, Jeff Downs, for being a part of Border Crossings today, and I hope you enjoyed hearing all about the history of three great supergroups: the Buggles, who gave us the first video played on MTV, also Asia, who gave us Heat of the Moment, a Grammy-winning hit, and Yes, who are on tour right now and promoting some new music. Jeff Downs joined us today. Thank you very much, Jeff. And thank you, Markel Hawkins, for putting together today's show. And my name is Larry London. I shall return tomorrow with more great stuff for you right here on Border Crossing. So don't miss it. This is the VOA1 Music Network.